Today on Snail Trail 4x4, Jimmy plays with a shaft and Tyler comes up with an extremely obnoxiously long word phrase for a giveaway.
Snail Trail 4x4 is brought to you by Bestline Racing. Bestline Racing has a complete lineup of performance additives for your engine's needs. From our oil additives to our fuel treatments, we have you covered for your hobby, tow rig, race car, or your daily driver. Check the show notes for your Snail Trail 4x4 discount at bestlineracing.com.
Beat time.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. If you like going off-roading in Toyotas, wrenching on Toyotas, camping in Toyotas, and maybe even poking a little bit of fun at Toyotas, and of course, hearing about how the shimmy shake goes on Toyotas, then this is the podcast for you. That's right, ladies and germs, welcome. This is episode 129. And this is also not the worst off-roading podcast on the internet. So it's going to be our new tagline. Sitting here next to me in the recording studio is also not the worst Jimmy in the world. Jimmy, how are you?
I'm doing not that bad.
That's good.
How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. Awesome. I've been getting wheeling withdrawals and trying to fill my time with other stuff.
So. Yeah, I think we all kind of have in the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's this whole episode we don't actually have a lot of wheeling to report about.
Yeah, we don't
because none of us were allowed out, and they only just recently, as it like yesterday or a few days ago, opened up all the national parks.
Saturday morning at 8 a.m. was when they opened at least Region 5 in California, which is kind of the western slope of the Sierras here in the Sierra Nevadas. They opened it up as a Saturday as of 8 a.m., which was actually really impressive, a lot quicker than I thought they were going to reopen things.
Oh, really?
I literally thought that they were going to be like, nope, let's just keep it closed and through winter, essentially, and get into seasonal closures. Because usually seasonal closures start looking at them going into effect around October.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I thought they were just going to be like, yeah, fuck it. Let's just keep everything closed for seasonal closures.
That's how 2020 would be, wouldn't it? Jeez.
So, no, it was really cool. They opened everything back up. So, my hat's off to the National Forests for actually doing that, because I believe on our last episode, I said, I'm very doubtful that they'll open things back up anytime soon. I'm hopeful that they will, but in actuality, I don't think they will. And they did. So I'm eating my words and giving my kudos to the National Forest. So thank you guys for opening things back up. We still can't do any overnight camping. There's no dispersed camping allowed.
Well, campgrounds are open though, right?
There's no dispersed campgrounds allowed.
No dispersed campgrounds. Right. Sorry, and no that you can go to a campground.
Exactly.
Though. Yeah.
Has to be
no open flames, no fire at all anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was listening.
No shooting.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was listening to Wheeling Wine and Whiskey, and they were at their safety clinic this last weekend.
Oh yeah.
Right. And the instructors were allowed to camp at Hollister.
Yes.
Right. And so they cooked in their ovens in their campers because that's all they could do.
Yeah.
I mean, they couldn't have fires. They couldn't have a barbecue. They couldn't have propane, you know, it's just crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy stuff. And you know, there's a lot of people out there that are on social media that are, in my opinion, throwing little bitch fits about not being able to have a fire. And I'm like, fuck you guys. Like grow up. If you still want to go out and have fun, they're like, well, I'm just not going to go out wheeling anymore because if I can't have a campfire. And I'm like,
good.
That's fine. And they're like, I can't survive on sandwiches.
I'm like,
you're an idiot. Like, you can do burritos, breakfast burritos. You can do cold pizza. You can take MREs, which I have a update on those.
Yep.
There's so many different other things you can take that don't require a flame source for you to have a meal.
Right. Like, absolutely.
Like, shut your spoiled ass up and get out and enjoy the wilderness. Apple. Right. Like, stop being a little baby.
I have some friends in my one of my groups that are like, I have to have a fire when I'm camping. And I'm like, there's no fires allowed here.
Yeah.
Like, you're not having a fire, you know? And I'm like, have to get in an argument with this. I have one person in mind specifically that I have to get in an argument every time. And I'm like, I'm not going to get in trouble because you want to have a fire.
Yeah.
You know, like this isn't like, you know, either I
it's
end up moving.
It's not worth the risk
like,
right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah.
And it's just they feel they're so adamant. It's like we're camping. We have to have a fire. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You don't.
No.
Put a lantern in the damn yeah. camp or the fire ring and everybody yeah. sit around it.
Yeah.
You should get, somebody needs to make, here's a $1 million idea for somebody. Uh-huh. Somebody needs to make a lantern that flickers a little red.
Well, they make fireplaces like that. They do. Fake fireplaces. Just yeah. get some of those.
Yeah. Figure out a way to make it into like a camp lantern.
All you need is a couple of red and orange LEDs that oscillate mm-hmm. with a fan and some red and yellow streamers
right.
that go up. And there you go.
I was, when I went out camping with the assistant a few weeks ago, we were, there was no fires allowed where we were out camping, mm-hmm. but you were allowed to have, like cook like with propane and stuff like yeah. that. And somebody had one of those propane fire pits
yeah.
out.
And those I'm are
like,
sweet.
Yeah. Cause theirs is like, as long as you can turn it off, mm-hmm. you know, you can get, you're good to go.
Yeah.
You know, at that point in time.
Yeah. Right. At that point in time.
So
I don't know. I'm definitely one. I love my campfires. I love my fires. Right. I'm always will be one of the first ones to start getting the fire ready mm-hmm. when I get to camp, but
that's because you want to play with your chainsaw.
That is true. There's part of that there, but like at the same time, I'm not going to give up what I love, which is wheeling and camping, like just mm-hmm. because I can't have a fire.
Sure.
I'm not.
Absolutely.
And I'm not, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe to the people, they do enjoy the fire more than they enjoy wheeling and camping. Mm-hmm. In which case, stay home and make a fire in your own backyard. Like,
yeah. See how that goes.
Yeah. Right. Put your own property at risk. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if fires are the ultimate draw for camping for you, then yeah, I can see. Don't go camping right now. Leave the forest more open for me
yeah.
to go camping
exactly.
in the campgrounds and leave the trails open for me to go and enjoy the trails. That's what I enjoy.
They're probably just pyros anyway.
That's fine. That works. Go light stuff on fire at your own place, mm-hmm. at your own house. So anyways, that's my rant for the week.
Nice.
We do have, so I wanted to give an update on, not really corrections, but our last episode was episode 128. We did safety. Kind of like emergency survival safety stuff.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of really cool feedback. From
yeah. It. I got a few direct messages to mm-hmm. me, that mm-hmm. were some great feedback.
Yep. One person, gave me the Amazon link to the heat up pouches.
Oh
yeah. So okay. apparently, and it's a standard thing with MREs, meals ready to eat.
Yeah.
Which are standard issue things for the military, which right. you and I, we made the comment, oh, we're not military people, so we don't know about this side of the world.
I mean, I know of MREs,
yeah.
you know, but I don't think I've ever eaten one.
I've never eaten one. I've never known how they worked, but I just thought they were like essentially vacuum sealed and packed meals that you just cut into. They're tin foil, so they last forever, yeah. but you cut into them and then you have a meal in a pouch kind
obviously
of thing.
We're wrong.
So we're wrong, and maybe that was how they were once done, but apparently the way they're done now is it's vacuum packed and freeze-dried pouches, and what you do is you add water to it and then you throw it in your heating pouch that has the heat up and chemicals, and you add liquid to that pouch and that heats everything up and boils
mm-hmm.
your
oh, cool.
meal.
So there's another thing you can take out camping with you that doesn't require a fire to cook with.
Uh-huh. So exactly. And I got so I mentioned it on the last podcast, that episode of, I don't know what these are, where to find them or anything. And I had like five or six people message me with different places where to find them.
Oh,
at.
Cool.
And so it was really cool. The one guy sent me, Roger, he sent me our ham radio nerd. Mm. He sent me the link to where you can find just the heating pouches.
Oh, that's
on Amazon.
Cool.
So you don't need to buy the MRE and the heating pouch and everything. You can just buy the heating pouch and then use that for different uses.
Can you, those aren't reusable though.
No, they're not reusable.
Do you pour water in that? That's what activates it.
Yep. Any liquid will activate the chemical cool. burn. And it's a mixture of something, 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 and magnesium. And magnesium is what it gets the fire going, the heat going really. And then it all the other chemicals combine to sustain it and continue it going.
Right.
So it actually gets really, like, it gets boiling hot. It will burn you.
Dang.
And so you can use that pack to heat up top ramen, a cup of noodles if you wanted. You could heat up hot chocolate. You can heat up pizza, just throw it into a Ziploc. You know, you could throw whatever you want into a Ziploc bag and throw it in there, and it's going to heat up whatever's in that Ziploc bag, right?
Right.
So I've ordered up some heating pouches.
Oh, cool.
So we can play around with them and see what kind of random
what are we allowed to cook?
Up.
Yeah, exactly. Or what can we cook?
Exactly.
A whole YouTube series.
Right. So what can you cook with MRE heat pouches?
I like it.
So anyways, I thought that was really cool. So huge shout out to Roger and everybody else that brought up those heating pouches to me. Lee, OutSane FJ80, solve function. He found some really, really spicy stuff. And he said that he buys the heat up these particular spicy noodle kits that come with an extra heating pouch. So that same kind of heating pouch he takes camping. And he said there's one that he can't eat because it's too spicy and he wants to challenge you to eat it.
Oh, I'm in.
So, right? That's what I said. I said, Jimmy is a freak of nature when it comes to spicy food. So he would definitely go for it. So we might end up doing that as well. But anyway, so that was the update from the listeners side of things. So the listeners definitely delivered, got some really cool stuff.
I got a good response from and an excellent suggestion from a guy named Samuel.
Okay.
Because when I was talking about how I was up on the top of a mountain and I was kind of using my GPS on my watch to find camp.
Oh yeah.
And I was walking down and I knew we needed to go down the hill and I knew we were like plus or minus 10 degrees, which is where the camp was.
Yeah.
So what he said is there's a term called intentional offset. And so what you do is if I knew my tent was plus or minus 10 degrees down from me,
okay,
I go 20 degrees to the right or 20 degrees to the left so that when I hike down, I know that I either need to turn one way. So let's just say I know I'm plus or minus 10 degrees below me.
Okay.
So what I do is I go 20 degrees to the right.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going farther right than I know it is.
Okay.
So then when I get down and I find like where the road or a path, I know I need to turn left to find camp.
Oh, interesting.
Right. So you that intentionally go wider than you know where you're going to need to be instead of trying to be like,
get in the middle and then you find the path. You're like, I don't know if I need to go right or left.
So you go wider so that when you get to the path, you know which direction you need to turn.
Gotcha. That's pretty clever.
Yeah. And he was saying that this is really good for like, while you're out backpacking or, you know, if you're hiking and you're like, I know the car is down there somewhere at the road, but I'm not sure where. So I'm going to go really wide to find the road. Yeah. And then I know I can backtrack easily.
There's a really cool show. I forget if it's on Netflix or Amazon, what it is, but it's these four guys. They're good buddies that have training in outdoor survival and navigation.
Cool.
Right. And so what they do is they kidnap each other and drop each other off one at a time in a completely random place in the world.
Dang.
And then they have 3 days, 72 hours to find civilization, find another human being.
That's cool.
And so it's a really cool game that they play with each other. And there's a lot of really cool tidbits that they teach and they talk about and they do in practice in the show.
Right.
Yeah.
I like it.
I'll have to see if we can find the name of if I can remember the name of it and get it into the show notes here for you guys. But it's hilarious, but also it's really cool seeing some of the strategies they use to find their way to civilization within 72 hours.
Mm-hmm. That's rad.
So
he also said, love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Looking forward to another November Jim's month.
Oh no.
Air quotes. No Jimber.
No Jimber. Uh-oh.
So get ready for that, ladies and gents.
God damn it. That means I got to start getting ready for it too. I forgot about Jim's month coming up. No Jimber. No Jimber is going to be starting in 5 weeks. Are you counting down now?
I am now.
Next time we come into the studio, there's going to be a poster on the wall.
A countdown.
With a countdown, a calendar just crossing off the days. Cool. So yeah, that's really cool. I love it, dude. Our listeners have such good ideas and such good kind of like feedback. And
yeah, well, everybody kind of comes cool from content. Different directions or different, you know, places in the world. Like Charles Locke said, one of the things that they take out with them a lot in Australia is snake bite kits.
Oh yeah.
Right. Cause I mean, I think when I messaged, I'm like, yeah, cause Australia has 11 of the top 15 most deadliest snakes in the world.
Yeah.
You know, like that's an obvious thing that you need to take out with you, you know? And things like we occasionally will see rattlesnakes here in Northern California and that's really about all we get.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of catered to specific areas on how you want to arrange your safety equipment, but you know, everywhere is a little different and everywhere has different ideas, which is fun.
We do need some clarification on one thing from the last episode.
Oh, what's that?
You mentioned and the patrons brought it up, and because I was thinking about it when you mentioned it, but I didn't say anything, but since the patrons brought it up, I have to say something now. You mentioned that you can use a meat tenderizer to get a bee sting out.
Okay. It doesn't.
So I'm picturing. I'm curious what you mean by a meat tenderizer, because I'm picturing a mallet that you use to
beat powder,
and tenderize meat.
There's a like a thing that looks like salt.
Okay,
that is meat tender. Is meat tenderizer?
It's not a meat rub, like for seasoning. It's a
kind of. I mean, it could be a
is
rub.
Is it a chemical that breaks down meat?
Sort of breaks down meat in a way. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so you just you make it into a paste with water.
Okay.
And you put it on to the bee sting.
Okay.
Right. It doesn't extract the stinger.
Uh-huh.
Right. But it will numb or kind of pull out the venom in that where you're stung.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't realize that meat tenderizer came in a powder form as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Okay, cool. Yeah. The only way I've known to tenderize meat is with a mallet.
Well, that would probably work also.
Or acid.
Right.
And vinegar, right? Or or wine or something that's acidic that you cook it in.
Yeah. So. No, there's a powder.
Oh.
A meat tenderizer powder.
Okay. Good to know. I didn't know that.
I'm sure if you hit, you know, if you got stung in the forearm and you hit their hand with the mallet, it would stop the pain of the bee sting.
That is true. So that's a good. Well, I'm going to start carrying a meat mallet.
Yeah, redirect the pain.
Okay, cool. Good to know. So other than that, we have a couple of reviews, speaking of listeners, and some cool feedback. So the first one here is CCSB. OBS. No clue who that is or what that stands for, but he said, great podcast. Love the podcast. Great banter as well as endless discussion about swappy swap swaps. So very cool. And we're going to have some more discussion about swappy swap swaps later in the episode, which is why I decided that would be a good one to read now. And the other one is from XJ Nemesis. Oh, there you go. That makes sense. Snail Trail 4x4. Great info for wheeling and product lines, even though I don't have a Toyota. I'll put up my XJ next to you guys all day with a lot of exclamation points.
Let's do it.
Keep up the good work. Happy 1 year and 100th episode. Been listening since High Sierra 4x4.
Cool.
So thanks, man. I thought that was pretty cool to have a longtime listener since the High Sierra days.
Yeah.
Chiming in and leaving a review. So I would like to point out that let's do it. Let's put up the XJ.
Yeah.
Next to us.
I'm down.
Next to the Toyotas.
I like XJs.
I like the looks of XJs, and I almost bought an XJ when I first started like looking into a dedicated crawler and then I realized they didn't have a frame.
Right.
And I was like, never mind.
Yeah, they're soulless.
Soulless.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, that's one of the first vehicles. I mean, that was the first vehicle I had was a Cherokee.
You know?
So I wheeled and it was bone stock and it wheeled with the 4 liter and the, you know, has a low gear in it and wheel great.
Those engines are awesome. I'll give them that. They are one of the best off-roading engines you can find. The inline 4 liters.
No. They're not an inline. I think it's an
inline 6 4 liter.
It's a straight six.
Straight six.
Yeah. But I know that our patron Ryan and Sarah, they have an XJ, and it. I mean, I've wheeled out to the con with them before, and you know they do great. They're wonderful. Yeah. They're great rigs. I like them a lot. So
I feel like there's I'm gonna get hate mail right now. But I also feel like this can be attributed to Toyotas, right?
Sure.
So there's a lot of really, really good XJ and Toyota wheelers out there, rigs out there that do some phenomenal things. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that goes to what you're willing to do with your rig because of how much money you've spent putting into it.
Kind of.
And so I think
I know where you're going with this is, okay, you know, Toyota, like the older Toyotas are the cheaper barrier to entry.
Oh, totally.
For off-roading. Absolutely. And I think XJs are that for the Jeep crowd.
100%. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so you can get in a little cheaper and then you can add to it, you know, and
as you go,
and you can build it up pretty easily and fairly cheap, and you can get a good off-roading rig.
Yeah.
Is that sort of the direction you're going?
Kind of. And then, okay. I mean, yes, 100% that direction. Then to kind of top it off is because you haven't spent $100,000 building a rig.
Yeah.
You're
okay leaning it up against a wall.
You're okay leaning up against a wall or taking it and getting it wedged up in windshield three or stuff like that. So, I think that, you know, when you don't have as much of an investment into a vehicle, you're more willing to do some crazy and fun stuff with it, right?
Sure.
So
I agree. I could follow that logic. Yeah. I got a funny message on Instagram from Noel, N-U-L-L.
Okay.
He wrote me and he said, I'm listening to the podcast. It doesn't look like your podcast and Instagram echo each other. But either way, I like them both. You were suggested by Instagram and I found you there and then started following you on the podcast. Would have thunk it would be, or wait, what did he say? Who would have thunk it? Nice job, guys. And I said, what do you mean by they don't echo each other, right? And he's like, well, you talk, you know, I've thought the Instagram would follow what you guys do on the podcast. And I was more or less said, yeah, we have a lot of moving parts on Snail Trail 4x4. You know, Instagram kind of just encompasses everything.
It kind of ties it all together. It's a lot of what we are doing on a day-to-day basis, right?
Yeah.
And then the podcast, we try and keep things entertainment in terms of updates on what we've done and let people almost live vicariously through the shit that we get into. And then also we try and keep it educational as well. And a lot of the educational stuff doesn't make it onto Instagram and the social media side.
Yeah.
And then the social media side is a lot of, you know, random shit we're up to, like building the sliders or different welding projects.
I would
or
say
trying to
that,
figure out stuff with Bobcat.
The Instagram accounts are almost, to me, it's like the most current thing that I'm up to.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Along with Thursday's episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And then YouTube is probably a month behind what I've been up to, if not sometimes more, because I know that I've got a roof rack video that I need to edit and get out of that of something I did like 6 months ago. You know, and I was just like, oh man, I need to get this out.
Yeah, video production pipeline builds up.
It does.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, for the most up-to-date stuff, follow Instagram or listen into the podcast. And, you know, if you need to learn something more, then check out YouTube.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. The podcast tends to fall within 1 to 2 weeks of being updated, current events, I guess.
Yeah.
YouTube is anywhere from you know, current events to 3 years old, like and that's kind of what's cool about YouTube. That's what it's there for, is you can use it to find stuff that is 3, 4, 10, 15 years old.
Right. And still be relevant.
Yeah.
Or completely out of date.
Yeah. Right.
Speaking about YouTube, I do have the Strawberry Pass video out.
Nice.
It comes out today, the day we're recording, but it'll, for those listening on the day of release, it came out yesterday.
Okay. Nice. So. Cool. I'll have to watch that because I want to see what Strawberry has turned into, because I haven't ran it in a year and a half, I think. Mm-hmm. No, it's been about a year now. So I'm curious to see what it looks like after a year of kind of getting brought back up to its former glory.
Right. Yeah, I was, well, Painted Rock's not as gnarly as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy, though, I didn't take Charlotte because it would not have made it. Or I probably would have gotten undercarriage damage.
Okay.
Because it's not big enough.
Yeah. That sounds like a personal problem.
Yeah, I think a 30... 33s, sliders and skid plates and a rear locker. That is, would be a very fun trail.
Really? Mm-hmm. You think you need a locker to get through that trail?
I think it would help. It
would help. What about a limited slip?
Yeah, I think that would work.
Okay.
As well. I think a locker, I mean, there's a lot of spots where you're going to be trying to kind of be off. Well, the articulation's happening in two different spots. So I think a locker would definitely help.
Okay.
And I think a lot of rigs these days come fairly off-roading rigs kind of come stock with a rear locker.
Yeah. A lot of them do.
So,
know.
I think it's kind of,
XJs don't.
XJs don't. Nor do any older Toyotas. Yeah. But,
No one needs to know that, Jimmy.
Well, but in 1994,
mid-90s.
Yeah, mid-90s, they started having lockers in them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, so if you have a rig that is 33s, skid plates, and sliders, and mainly the slider or skid plates because you're on 33s, if you're bigger, you might not need as much protection. Mm-hmm. And a rear locker, then that trails would be a fun few hour trail.
Yeah.
So I think I said on a previous podcast that it like took us 2.5 hours of moving time to get through the whole trail. So it wasn't bad at all.
Nice. Cool. So that's coming out, or that is out.
That is out.
As of when you're listening to this,
yes,
that's out. So go check out, if you're local to NorCal, go check out Strawberry Pass Trail and decide if you want to go do it. It is a gorgeous trail. It has up at the lookout area, the high point of the trail. Mm-hmm. It's got some really, really nice views of the valley there.
It does. You don't get to see it as well in the video because it was smoky when I did it. You can still tell that it's an awesome view, and you know, actually it's kind of nice because it's sort of a tease, right? It's like, wow, that's a great view, and I'm sure it'd be even nicer when it's not smoky, so I should go see it.
Yeah.
So get out, don't go starting forest fires, but go play.
Yeah, go play, go have fun. You can do, so this was an interesting thing that I saw on the Rubicon Trail Instagram, was that technically there's no camping. That's specifically what's said.
Yeah.
But nowhere does it say you can't use the trails at night. So you can do night runs in the forest right now.
Hmm.
You just can't camp.
Sure. Right. You can, as long as you're not camping and you're moving.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. That's cool. Other than that, we have the Ultimate Garage giveaway.
Yes.
Going on still. So $35,000 of tools, gear wrench tools added to your garage, which is pretty damn cool. Pretty cool thing that's delivered by Kurt Busch to your doorstep. We've seen a couple of people posting on social media their entries and saying, I just entered the Ultimate Garage giveaway, and tagging us on there.
Which is awesome.
That's pretty cool. I really, really hope that we have a Snail Trail listener as the winner of the garage giveaway, Ultimate Garage giveaway.
I do as well.
That would be so cool. So make sure that everybody is going and signing up for that. As of right now, for, what did I write down? Gear Wrench Corey's Garage Giveaway of Magnificent and Epic Tool Proportions.
Yeah.
We have 4 entries right now.
Okay.
So currently a 25% chance of winning $10,000, roughly.
Roughly.
In Gear Wrench Tools and Crescent and all these other cool brands. So a 25% chance of winning. Make sure that you are signing up for the Ultimate Garage Giveaway and then coming over and signing up for Gear Wrench Corey's Garage Giveaway of Magnificent and Epic Tool Proportions.
Yeah, that ends on November 17th.
15th or 17th, 15th, I forget 17th. Which day it is. Mm-hmm. So we have a few more days. It's going to be halfway through November. It'll be halfway through November that will be ended, and then we'll be announcing the winners of both of those giveaways in December.
Yeah, we'll probably announce the winner for, what was it?
Garrett Corey's Garage Giveaway of Magnificent and Epic Tool Proportions.
After they announce the Ultimate Garage winner.
Okay, true.
Because we'll poll that. If it's a Snail Trail winner, they're not going to, I mean, they'll just double up on all kinds of tools. So we'll roll it over to somebody else.
True. So cool. That's the updates there. One thing I did notice, so we are officially now on Amazon Music as well.
Yes.
We got that set up. And as I was checking everything to make sure that Amazon had it all listed properly and correctly, I noticed that Amazon does the same thing that Spotify does, and they do not show all of our show notes.
Really?
Yes. They only show like the first 100 words, something like that, of our show notes.
Interesting.
So if you are listening on Spotify or Amazon Music, check this episode's show. Anything I'm going to say right now. If you are listening to this podcast on a platform, a podcast platform, and not the website, look at your app right now and make sure that you can see all the way down to the intro music credits. So if you can see the line that says, this song is done by so-and-so, then you can see all the show notes. If you cannot see that line that says what our intro song is and who it's credited to, then you're not seeing all the show notes, which means there's a lot of links in there, like the Ultimate Garage Giveaway, the Gear Wrench Corey's Garage Giveaway, Magnificent Epic Tool Proportions, the Bestline Racing discount code link. There's a lot of really cool stuff in the show notes that you're missing because you're using a platform that doesn't show all the show notes.
Right.
So,
and so if you... that's totally fine to use.
Yes.
Just realize that you're missing out on those links. And if you need to find those links or you want to find those links, go over to snailtrail4x4.com.
Yeah.
And all of that will be there for you.
Exactly. Head over to the website, pull up any episode on the website. Now all those links will be there as well.
Another announcement. Another announcement.
Are you pregnant?
No, I'm not.
Okay, good.
I wish I had a food baby right now. Though. I know, I'm pretty hungry. There's a petition going around. We'll probably add the link down in the show notes.
Yes.
So thanks for bringing that up before this. Mm-hmm. For Oceana Dunes.
Yes.
There's a petition going around to try and open that back up.
Yes, and this is huge because, as we all know, we've been kind of covering the fight for Oceana Dunes and the fight for our public lands to be used and managed properly for outdoor recreation. And right now, Oceano Dunes, a lot of the other estate vehicle recreation areas, SVRAs in California, are wide open.
Yes.
You can go visit them. Prairie City is wide open. Hollister Hills is wide open. There's a lot of other ones that are wide open, available to use, but Oceano Dunes is not. And so essentially, there's a petition going around that's saying if you sign it and there's enough signatures, they're going to use that to put pressure on governments and the state SVRA organizations, the OHV programs in the state of California, to show that outdoor recreationalists want to use the lands that are designated for outdoor recreation.
Right.
And if they still refuse to open up those lands, that gives us precedence then to sue and start opening up lawsuits against the land management company organizations to make sure that they are managing the land for what that land was slated to be used for. So please make sure that you go and sign the petition. Not only because it shows that we as off-roaders and as outdoor recreationalists enjoy outdoor recreation, but B, it'll also set up a precedent so that if organizations for some reason don't want to allow the lands to be open and used for what the lands were set up to be used for in their management plans, it gives us precedence to it gives us teeth, I should say, to start going after them and saying, no, this land was set up in its land management plan to be used as this. This is part of the usage. It needs to be open and available to the public to be used. It's being funded by public funds.
Right.
You have to stick to public usage and what the land management plan is.
Yeah. Part of our funds are going into a closed territory.
Exactly.
How does that sound?
It sounds silly to me. Right? So please go sign that petition. It's a big deal. And it'll be the link in the show notes. I will have it directly at the top so that no matter what platform you're seeing it on, it'll be there for you to click on.
Yeah. That's how much we care about it.
Exactly.
So yeah please. So, even if you're not in the state, you can sign it.
It just puts a big precedence because, you know, as lands, public lands get shut down in other states, if this kind of works, then it'll give precedence for you in other states to be able to kind of mimic this same path to get the lands back open and used for outdoor recreation again.
Right. Absolutely.
So anyways, that's our soapbox section for the day.
Good.
Please go in and sign that petition. Other than that, what have you been up to?
Let's see.
Because we haven't been up to a whole lot of wheeling.
No, we haven't. I've been up to a lot of video editing and working on snail armor things, kind of behind the scenes stuff going on. But I still, I believe last time we left off when Bobcat was still in pieces. Like I drove it. I
think so.
I did a tire swap and then that didn't solve it. So then I went and... people were saying it was the angle, the dangle.
Your dangle angle's off, angle. Jimmy.
And and I was in the process of doing that. Yeah. I don't think I finished it in for that episode.
I don't think there's been an update since we were going to test the dangle angle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I had to fix a brake line because I broke it. And then I had to add the shims in.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, I had to take the rear axle out because the shims I have actually use the center pin of the leaf springs to stay in place.
Okay.
And so I left the springs attached to the vehicle and, you know, just dropped the axle down and then took the center pin out, put the shim in, put the center pin back in.
Bolted. Did you have to get a new center pin, a longer center pin?
No, the center pin's like 3 inches longer than it needs to be.
Nice. Okay.
I was like, oh, I should cut that down. And now I'm kind of like, oh, I'm glad I didn't.
Yeah.
So took it for another drive and I'm still getting a vibration.
Damn.
Yeah.
So it's not your dangle angle.
No. I still have people saying it's not close enough.
Interesting.
I have a CV or a double cardan on the top and and people are telling me that it needs to be within like 3 degrees of the drive shaft angle to my pinion angle, and I'm at 5 degrees.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, 2 degrees is enough to cause vibrations in a 2 degree bad dangle angle.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
So, I've got more shims and the shims are roughly 5 degrees. So if I add another set of shims in,
yeah,
I would put me like pretty much dead even or like plus or minus 1 degree.
Gotcha.
And then, so I'm considering doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of people say that I need to check the nuts on both the rear output flange.
Check and, your nuts.
Yeah. And the... waka, waka, waka. And the pinion nut.
Okay.
So I need to... do that. So I thought I might as well check those. That's an easy taking everything apart. It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
So I might check my nuts first.
Sorry.
And then I might, you know, if there's nothing there, another thing I want to check is the third member.
Yeah.
It's sort of I was trying to think back and a lot of people were like, well, when did the problems start?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I said, well, it started when we changed out a transmission in T cases. I added leaf springs and lifted it an inch or so.
Uh-huh.
Put a new third member in it.
Uh-huh.
And added a new drive shaft.
Yeah.
So it's like I changed 4 things all at once and then I started getting this vibration. And since then I've changed out the drive shaft probably twice.
Yeah.
And I've added new rear bearings and new axle shafts.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of eliminating the axle shafts as being bad.
What about your housing being warped?
I don't think it's warped enough if it is warped because one, I don't think I'd be able to get the axle shafts out or get the new axle shafts in if it was warped. I know I was having that cracking or the cracking that was going on there.
So you're saying right now your shaft slides in and out just fine?
Oh, it slides in great.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially with the lube and if it's oiled up right.
Uh-huh. I had the volume down.
So, yeah. Grow up,
Tyler. never gonna happen.
So I'm eliminating axle shafts. I'm not eliminating the third member yet. It's gonna be one of the last things I'm going to search out, kind of though, because it is a newer one. It's been rebuilt. and it's one, kind of one of the deepest things in the axle.
Yeah.
So I'm going to check the nuts, then maybe do the angle again, then maybe go for the third member if I'm still having problems.
So here was an interesting thought that I would have never thought of.
Okay.
Our interviewee that we had over at the studio a couple days ago, he's mm-hmm. coming in on Monday's episode.
Yep.
He mentioned that he had an old FJ80 and he set it up so that it used to be full-time four-wheel drive.
Right.
And he got in and tinkered with the transfer case and made it no longer, he made it selectable four-wheel drive, right?
Right.
So, but he said that even with it being selectable four-wheel drive and being in rear wheel two-wheel drive, going down the freeway, his front drive shaft would still spin.
Sure.
Just due to
like a residual,
something residually causing it to spin.
Rotation.
It wouldn't necessarily rotate at full speed as if he was in four-wheel drive on the freeway.
Right.
But he said it was still spinning. And mm-hmm. so driving around the snail trail compound, your front drive shaft does not spin at all. It doesn't move. It doesn't even think about spinning.
Right. But, and we're going like 5 miles an hour, if that.
Yeah.
You know? So, but if I'm at 60, it might be spinning.
Might be. I thought that was an interesting thought that I would never have occurred to me.
Yeah. I thought about pulling the front drive shaft out and pulling the hubs off.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can eliminate.
Just put dry flanges on it?
Or? No, I would not even put anything on it. So just be open.
Okay.
So there wouldn't be any, like, even if, like, there's a potential of the hubs possibly being stuck.
Gotcha.
Right? And one side is spinning,
mm-hmm.
you know, and causing the drive shaft to spin,
yeah.
you know, and so, or the front third member to spin, you know, and so mm-hmm. That's another idea, is to. I need to, one of the things, a lot of people said, I need to pull out the rear drive shaft and drive it on my front. Which I can't do. But the thought is that now you're eliminating like
the rear drive shaft.
The power of things out in the rear.
Yeah.
Right. And you're driving off the front. So you're kind of eliminating the drive shaft or,
and the third member in a way. Not really. Your third member is still going to spin.
I don't know things, and it's worse when it's coasting. So I don't know if that would be an advantage or not.
See, if it's worse when you're coasting, that to me says either it says something with your driveline, either U joints or your driveline bolts came loose or something. Because with power engaged, it means there's tension on everything and you're just tension. You're going, or your backlash got off in the third member. And, coasting is now, there's too much of a backlash there for the coast, and you're hitting both sides of the gear, right? Your drive and your coast side
sure.
as you're going. Either that or your U-joints are loose. They're no longer under tension. So when you're coasting, you're getting this vibration because your U-joints are loose. I do know that when they rebuild drive shafts, they will just retube it.
Mm-hmm.
And they throw the same U-joints on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if there's... You know, your drive shafts have been redone 3 times this year, but your U-joints haven't.
Agreed.
So I don't know.
And that's probably true.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's been balanced, but mm-hmm. it doesn't mean that it's balanced under load and not at low speeds or not at neutral or relaxed state.
Yeah.
You would think that they're balancing it perfectly straight, which mine's not.
Yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, it could still in theory be the drive shaft.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if I can pull Kermit's front drive line out. Is it balanced?
I've never had any issues with it being unbalanced, but I also am super, super picky about not running in four wheel drive over like 30, 40 miles an hour.
Right.
So don't know if I've ever ran Kermit higher than 40 miles an hour.
Yeah. Because I can only get to like 25 to 30 on my front drive line before it is violently vibrating.
I don't know. I think there was one time I forgot to unlock the hubs after airing up on a trip, and I drove around on it a few days and I was like getting a weird noise. And I think that was just the front output of the T case.
Hmm.
But I don't remember getting a funny vibration. So I'd say let's try it.
Might be worth a try.
Yeah.
Another thing I noticed is when I did the tire swappy swap, two of your tires were at 30 PSI and two of your tires were at 10.
Were they the rear ones?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
Okay.
I literally need to take those beadlocks apart and put in a really thin bead of silicone in there on the beads.
I know that I hear that the Maxis Trepidors are have like a thin area where the bead lock is or the bead is, and people have put duct tape there to kind of make like fold it over and around to kind of just make it a little thicker.
That'd be good.
So that's another, have to try that idea.
Yeah.
Maybe do one silicone, one duct tape and see if one works a little better.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I haven't played with Bobcat a lot lately, just getting other things done. But I'm still having the problem, and there's still a bunch of small solutions that could solve it.
Yeah.
You know,
so there's a lot of little things that it could be.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's like, well, let's try this one. And that takes like an entire day to try to figure it out. You know, okay, well, let's try this one. I mean, just checking the pinion nut in the rear output, it won't take a full day. Yeah. But, you know, but then what's next? You know, it's like I've got a few pretty in-depth steps that I might need to take. So
yeah, well, let's take, I don't know if Ori needs my front drive shaft.
I don't know why he would.
We'll talk to him. If he doesn't, then we'll bring my front drive shaft back.
Yeah,
so okay. we're scheduled today after recording, we're gonna go and take Kermit up to Ori, who is 83 Ricky Bobby on Instagram. He's doing the engine swap, and we're getting down to where the custom harness, the conversion harness that I'm having made with Off-Road Solutions, they said delivery should be in during the first week of October.
Cool.
So we're kind of getting down to that 2 week mark now, being out. And so Ori was like, yeah, I can get the rig done in about 1 to 2 weeks. I just need all the parts here. And so we're going to send the Kermit up to him today. So that he can start ripping out the 22RE, the W56 transmission, taking my T cases and rebuilding them and putting the 23 spline inputs into them, and then start putting in the 3-4, fabricating engine mounts, see if he needs to make a new crossmember for the transmission T case, and getting all of that kind of set up and make sure it's all good to go. And that way, once the conversion harness shows up near the end of the first week of October, he can just plug that in and we'll be good to go. So if he doesn't, we'll ask him if he needs that front drive shaft.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't, then let's bring it back with us.
Yeah, I don't know why he would.
No, either. But,
maybe other he than knows something.
Figuring out spacing and seeing if I might need a new drive shaft, but we can figure that out. I mean, I don't think
transmissions moving forward or back.
That's a good question. I'm not sure how,
because if that's true, then you're going to need a new rear drive shaft.
True. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how long the R150 is compared to the W56 and the engine, where the bell housing and everything lines up. So that's a good question.
So because of that, he might need it.
He might need it, but yeah, I don't know. If we end up needing, you're right. If we end up needing a new front drive shaft, then I'll need a new rear drive shaft as well.
Right.
So
yeah,
he wouldn't need either one. But anyways, so, okay. What did you do with Brennan? Cause I heard that you and Brennan got together, our buddy over at Trail 4R, Brennan, because he has a taco now.
He does.
Still have never seen.
He has a second gen, later model. I guess they did an update in the second gens.
So it's after 2009, right?
Yeah, I think it's a 13.
I think they did the update in 10, 11?
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah. So Brennan was originally going to come down and we were going to do a suspension lift on his dark colored 4Runner.
On Jade?
Oh. And we were going to lift that guy up, but Brennan's sort of having some back problems. And so he's like, I don't want to wrench that long.
He's getting old. He's getting old already.
He is. And he's younger than both of us. He's younger than me, older than you, I think.
Is he older than me? I thought he was younger than me.
I don't know. You guys would have a battle.
All right.
So he didn't want to wrench that long. And I was like, well, I've got some small projects that I could probably do on the Tacoma. And he was like, yeah, so do I. I'm like, okay, well, bring your Tacoma down and let's do one or two small projects, you know? And so he came down and we installed a pro grill on the front of his Tacoma, which, man, those pro grills look good.
Do they?
Yeah.
What I mean, describe them to me. I don't know what a pro grill is.
The TRD Pro Grill. It's sort of has a bar, a bigger bar that goes across the middle of the grill location, and then it says Tacoma or Toyota in the middle.
Okay.
And it's the one that is on like every, it's like the probably the one of the most number one mods, you know, probably or really? Probably the, the most number one mod on a vehicle.
Okay.
You know, I can't, you know, that or it's, I have no idea. It's probably the most common mod on a Tacoma.
Okay.
Is to change out the grill to a TRD Pro style.
Okay.
For both second gens and third gens. Uh-huh. And it's like you'll pull up any Tacoma and it probably has the TRD Pro grill on it. Okay. And that's the number one reason I didn't want it. Because I just didn't want the same grill that everybody had.
That's like your Walker Evans thing.
Kind of. Yeah. Well, I like what, yeah, kind of. Yeah. I'm sort of that way. I'm sort of like, I'm sort of hipster, right? I don't want to be thrown into the mainstream.
I was just going to say, drown you in the mainstream.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm okay with it if it's more superior, mm-hmm. right? And a better version to have, okay. you know. But if it's like a grill, mm-hmm. it's like, does it make it look better? Yeah, maybe. But does my grill look good? Yeah, it still looks good. Mm-hmm. Does it look as good? Yeah.
I really like your grill.
You know, an argument on some people, but
not this grill.
No, your thanks. Face.
I don't like that. You have a grill for podcasts.
Yeah.
There
you go. So we installed that, which is really easy, and it's even easier on the second gen than it is on the third gen.
Oh, nice.
So that was really smooth. And then we installed this Overland equipped bracket. Mm-hmm. I believe that's the name of it. And it had a 12 fuse block from Blue Seas.
Oh, I love their stuff.
And a 100 amp breaker on the bracket. So they make the bracket and then they put these two things on there, and it's already the positive wired and negatives everything. Are already wired. Okay. So you just install the bracket and then hook up the wires.
The breaker controls the fuse box, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So the positive for the fuse box goes to the breaker, and then the breaker positive goes to the battery.
Cool.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then the negative from the fuse box they put it onto the body ground.
Okay.
Right there, because mm-hmm. the short ground wire from the battery and the ground for the body.
Yep.
So that's what we did. And it was, I mean, that was... You didn't even unscrew the bolts on the bottom. You loosened it, and the bracket has a slot, so you just slide it down into place.
Over what?
Just behind the bolt. Oh. So you just loosen the bolt far enough that you can slide the bracket in.
Interesting.
Right, so you don't need to pull the bolts out so that to put it, you know, through a hole or try to find the hole when it's all backwards.
Yeah.
You just need to pull it out enough to slide it back and in.
Gotcha. So essentially what you're saying is it's really easy to... slide it in and out.
Yes, again.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Just making sure that we're clear on that fact that, again, you're harping on the easiness of it sliding in and out.
Yeah.
Cool.
And... What? And it doesn't have to do with the girth.
Gotcha. Oh, man. Cool.
And so those were the two projects that we had... he had another one of some like a Molly panel that you can put in front of your seat and some seat risers.
In front of your seat?
Yeah, you put it like the two bolts that are that hold the seat down on the bottom. It's just this like 2-inch tall Molly panel.
Yeah.
That you just strap or you can bolt
put your Element fire extinguisher on.
That's exactly what I would put it there. Yeah, and so he had that, and it also had some seat adjusters because everybody complains about the Tacoma seat angle. And
what about it?
That it's too reclined. It's not truck-like. Uh-huh. It's like a, you know,
interesting
a Supra or whatever.
I like that about him.
Yeah. I've never had an issue with it because I've pretty much only ever drove the Toyota pickups. And so like maybe I'm just used to it. Uh-huh. But a lot of people don't like it. And Brendan actually, we didn't install that, but he did it later. And he did a story on his Instagram about how much better the seat position is and how it's more like his 4Runner, which is more upright.
Interesting.
And, you know, it's like a small spacer in the very front, but it's like a 2-inch lift in the rear.
Yeah.
And so it levels the seat out a little bit more. Huh. And so he liked it a lot.
Okay.
But yeah, we didn't do that one because I was planning to go wine tasting with the assistant, and we kind of went over a little bit. We talked more than we should have, which is...
On Saturday, you went wine tasting?
Yeah.
I did too. Where'd you go?
We went to a small winery just around the corner from me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice. We ended up going over to our wedding venue.
Oh, cool.
We had a few wine clubs to pick up there. So
sweet.
Yeah, it was nice.
We're about through with the case that you got us.
Nice.
Which is mighty tasty.
It was. I was really impressed for being a blend. It was fantastic. Mm-hmm. We still have a couple bottles left.
Yeah, and I'm actually going this Saturday up to the assistants, the place that we met you at Skinner.
Yeah.
Skinner Winery. We're going up there for the assistants pickup.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
Yeah.
A funny story, by the way, while we were at the winery,
yeah,
there was a car with three really old people in it.
Okay.
Two of them were a couple. The third one was the brother. And the couple had been married for 63 years.
Whoa.
So they were 83 years old. But I was sitting there because, you know, we're drinking outside. Can't mm-hmm. be inside. And so I'm sitting there watching them for a while because they had the back of their car open. It was a Toyota Highlander.
Okay.
And at the back of the car open, they're fussing around with the spare tire. And I'm like, just kind of watching them. And they're having, it's taking them a very, very long time to figure out the spare tire situation.
Yeah.
So finally, I'm like, all right, I'll be right back. So I got up and I went over and I was like, hey, do you guys need any help? Like, is there anything I can help with? And they're like, I don't know if there's anything you can help with unless you know Toyotas. And I was like, oh boy, today's your lucky day. So I was like, what are you guys trying to do? And they're like, well, we've got a flat over here and we're just trying to get the spare tire, drop it out of the bottom of the vehicle and get the spare tire off it.
They couldn't find the slot?
No, they found it. The tire was dangling off on the bottom of the vehicle. They couldn't figure out how to get the tire off of the little plate.
Oh.
And so I was like, well, let me just take a look here. And they've been like rolling around in the dirt because it's a dirt driveway there. They're sitting in parked in. So
you lift
it
up.
I'm like, here, let me get under there for you. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, oh, it's just on the plate. And they're like, yeah, we can't get it. I don't know how you're supposed to get the plate through the hole. And I'm like, well, yeah, here, you just lift the tire. I was like, here, it kind of is a two. I could see how you'd struggle because it's kind of a two-person job if you're
83.
If you're 83, exactly, yeah. So I was like, here, what I'm going to do, I'm going to lift up the tire, and then that plate should start moving around. It'll be free-floating then.
Yeah.
Just turn it sideways and turn push it up through the hole.
Yep.
So he goes, no, that won't work. The plate's stuck on the little thing hanging there. I was like, no, just here. So I lift up the tire and he started moving around. He goes, well, I'll be damned. Shoved it up through the hole and the tire drops right out. And he goes, well, thank you so much. I was like, yeah, no problem. Can I help with, do you need to break your lug nuts loose? Like, what do you got to break them loose? Or to lift the, jack the tire up? And they knew he knew how to change a tire. Sure. So like he was doing all the right steps. So I just kind of hung out there and talked with the wife for a little bit. She told me their whole story.
Right. Yeah.
And how they were in a retirement center, a retirement home, and they moved out during COVID.
Yeah.
Because they were sick and tired of being on lockdown. They couldn't go anywhere. So they ended up moving out and renting an apartment again. They're like, we're so much happier there. The only way they would let us leave is if we lied to them and told them we had to go get blood work done, blood work drawn. Then we can go out and have an afternoon to do stuff.
That's so funny.
But anyway, so they were super cute and adorable. And I just thought it was a fun little story.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So cool. So did you guys get anything else done on Saturday with the Tacomas or
no? It was just we just did the grill mm-hmm. and the bracket, and that was all we did.
Nice.
So I did shoot two videos, so those will be coming out eventually. Not sure when. And the bracket's probably just gonna be like a 2 minute Tuesday sort of thing.
Okay,
because it's gonna loosen one bolt, slide the bracket in. They supply you with the two other bolts, undo the battery, and connect everything up. Done.
Nice.
You know. Yeah, so that was about it. So
okay, cool. Yeah, I was up to some fun things. Thanks for asking.
I wasn't curious.
I figured. No, I've been playing around in my spare time with those Rough Stuff Universal sliders.
How are they?
They're pretty damn cool.
Are they?
I think I've said it in the past, for somebody who knows nothing about fabrication, knows nothing really about how to cut tubing even. Like I just take a grinder and make a measurement and cut, and then I'll kind of get it where it needs to be with mm-hmm. the flapper disc after it's cut. Like, so I know how to use a digital degree angle finder in order to get the correct 45 degree angle so that they're parallel with each other, right? And not on different rotations.
Yeah.
I know how to use one of those. I know how to use a tape measure, and I kind of know how to use a grinder. So it's okay. It's turned out pretty good so far. I did make one incorrect cut in the sense that I made the measurements so you have a 45 degree angle, right? So you have a long side and a short side. Mm-hmm. I made the measurements for the long side and then cut it as if I made the measurements for the short side. So I made essentially my tube end up being 2 inches short from what I needed. So I had to cut another 2-inch little section of tube and fit it into everything. I'm just gonna have to weld it around and kind of weld a new tube. It's gonna create a tube and then grind that down so it's part of the tube again.
Are you gonna sleeve it?
No.
Okay.
I hadn't planned on it. I don't know.
I mean, it's right there where there's like a bracket on top, right?
Mm-hmm. Also, there's a lot of extra things kind of holding it right there. It's for support. That and the sliders come with 4 frame tubes and brackets and gussets for all of that.
Right.
And it comes with 4 slider gussets. So there's quite a bit of gusseting and support. I'm pretty impressed with how beefy these things are. And how easy they are to just kind of make your measurements and then start cutting and grinding away is really what it's come down to. So I think total time spent on it has been about 13, maybe 14 hours in total.
Really?
For the whole project. And that's literally because like it took me 3 hours, 3.5 hours, I think, to figure out how to make the measurements and cut the 45s and get it all fitting correctly on the first one. And then once I figured out the process for doing it, the second one I did in 45 minutes.
Sure.
Same thing, trying to figure out
how somebody that's experienced could probably do it in 45 minutes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They'll probably do it in half an hour, 20 minutes, especially if you have a chop saw, you can just bloop.
Right.
You're good to go. Somebody who has experience with doing
and some tools
this stuff and the right tools and everything, you could probably do the whole project in like 4 to 5 hours. So this has just been fun for me to kind of figure out and how things work and how to use mm-hmm. the tools at my disposal.
Yeah.
And then playing around with the welder. And I have another kind of side welding project that's really just something I came up with to give me a lot of welding time. So I get a lot of time and there's a lot of welds to go with it that are completely useless welds, but they're more for cosmetics, I guess,
sure.
But there's just a lot of them. So it gives me a lot of welding practice. So, it's just welding a lot of plate together essentially.
For what?
It's a sign for a buddy's business.
Okay.
So he'll be putting it up at his business and it's just kind of welding letters to the sign. Then he's going to powder coat it and have it up. But it's a fun little project that it just gives me a lot of welding practice and a lot of time on the welder. Right.
Right.
And so, I spent a lot of time with Hussman kind of on the phone and sending him pictures. And he'd be like, you're way too hot. Your line speed's way too high. And he yelled at me at one point because I was like, well, that's what the machine settings say to set it at. And he goes, fuck the machine settings. I was like, okay.
Well, the machine settings are a guideline.
They're a guideline, but I also learned apparently the machine settings are for what you're doing if you're welding in the middle of your material. So I'm not doing that. I'm welding at the edges
sure.
of the material.
Okay.
So it doesn't need 22 volts to weld. I only need 18 volts to weld at the edges of the material.
Sure. Well, it's
the heat's and it's not dissipating.
Right.
Right.
And these are things that you'll learn as you're, mm-hmm. as you're experiencing the weld, but I was saying the welding, what the welder says is more of a guideline, like this is where you could start.
Mm-hmm.
And then depending on what you're doing, you deviate one way or another.
Yeah. But my welder, for instance, my 251 settings say for 5/16 plate, I should be welding at 22 volts and 400 inches per minute.
Mm-hmm.
And for like a quarter inch plate, it says that it should be at like 21 volts and 300 inches per minute, roughly.
Right.
So I'm welding right now at the like 1/8, just below the 1/8 plate settings that the welder recommends.
Interesting.
For 5/16 inch plate.
Yeah.
And that's where it's working out really well.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it's not only that the settings are a guideline, the settings, according to what I'm doing, are way off.
Right.
So,
sure.
I thought that was interesting. And then when I learned that the settings they give are for literally welding in the middle of something where your heat is dissipating across the whole plate, that's
makes sense.
Makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, definitely.
So, but once we got the settings down and I listened to him begrudgingly.
it's hard sometimes.
It's welding beautifully.
You posted some awesome photos.
And I'm starting to figure out the little tiny things of what people mean when they say control the puddle. And know right. what the puddle's doing, be able to see what the puddle's doing and play around with it. So I'm kind of like playing around and figuring out, you know, how I can swipe the puddle upwards to cover the full face of what I'm welding.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
It's been really, really cool and really neat to see that and play around with different techniques to not just get a good weld, but then make it look really pretty too.
Yeah.
So, it's been fun.
Yeah. It's tough with the flux core. Cause it just, when I start seeing the puddle, it's too much.
Yeah.
There's just right. too much there.
Yeah.
You know, cause the flux kind of covers some of it. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, I know I understand what you're saying, but I don't have that yet. Can't do that yet.
We'll have to have you come over and just run lines and help me with my welding project.
Yeah.
With the 251. So, I've been really impressed with that welder so far. And for coming from somebody who has no welding experience and being mm-hmm. able to kind of produce the welds that I'm producing right now, I think it goes a lot to show about the welder and a lot to show about how much knowledge and how good Hussman is about explaining things.
Yeah. I mean, the teacher, teacher is definitely a help,
yeah.
you know, and just doing it, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to learn, you know, as much or more by actually doing it in practice.
Hands-on, yeah. 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 So I was listening to, while I've been kind of working on these side projects in my spare time, I've been listening to getting caught up and kind of bouncing around on different podcast episodes that yeah. I've been wanting to listen to for a while.
Okay.
And so one of them that came up was Rough Stuff's episode 6 and 7 on their fabrication and welding.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
With Dan Trout and Kevin Harrington, Kevin from WFO. The third guy, I forget who the third person was, but listening to those guys talk about fabrication and welding, I mean, they have three different viewpoints, right? They have three different specialties that they really specialize on.
Okay.
One of them is Ultra 4 cars. Another one is big, you know, F250, F350s.
Sure.
And doing axle swaps and different suspension styles for that type of vehicle versus suspension styles for Ultra 4 cars versus suspension styles for off-road rock crawlers, trail rigs kind of thing, and mm-hmm. different welding techniques and fabrication techniques for those three different areas. It was really cool to kind of hear their input. So I'd highly recommend go checking that out. But going from that, listening to them, and then applying some of the little tidbits that I picked up. And then also I watched an episode of Dirt Lifestyle. I'm just figuring out who he is, Nate from he used to be on Bleep and Jeep, I guess.
Yeah.
So he has an episode about it's his series on putting 1 tons under his LR3,
yeah, his Land Rover,
and he talks about suspension and doing a 3-link setup and kind of how to measure and set up everything to do a 3-link setup. And I thought I was like, oh, this takes a lot of the guesswork out of, like, it makes sense
right.
what he was explaining. I've never really looked into it before, so I'm sure other people make perfect sense as to how they explain it too. But I was just randomly came across it while I was eating lunch one day, and I was like, yeah, sure, I'll watch this episode. It's 20 minutes long, right? Perfect, easy for mm-hmm. my lunchtime. And I was like, oh man, I want to go do the three link on Kermit now.
Yeah.
Once the engine's done. So
Nate's a cool guy. Mm-hmm. I haven't talked on the phone with him, but we've messaged quite a bit on Instagram.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, because we're up more on the YouTube side of things.
Okay. Yeah.
And so we should grab him, get him on here one day. That would be a lot of fun to chat with him. That would be
fun. Yeah.
He's, he's a hell of a fabricator. Mm-hmm. I think he was a plumber.
Oh, really?
Or an electric. He was one of the trades.
Okay.
And he now is full time YouTube.
Wow.
You know, and since because he left Bleep and Jeep.
Uh-huh.
And it was funny because I saw him on like his third or fourth video. And I'm like, F this guy.
Oh, really?
He's had like three videos out. Uh-huh. And he has like 25,000 subscribers. Oh, like, what the hell? And now he's like way over that, wow. You know, or something. Uh-huh. He's got a ton of subscribers. And at the time, I think I just broke 10 or something, you know?
Okay.
And I'm like, how this guy has like so little videos, yeah. But he has so many followers. I was pissed.
That's funny.
But then I found out he was part of Bleep and Jeep, and then he left Bleep and Jeep. And I'm like, oh, okay.
That makes more sense now.
Kind of like us with High Sierra brought some of our audience over, and he mm-hmm. did the same with, you know, that. And so,
gotcha.
You know, but he's a really nice guy. And he knows his stuff.
Where's he located?
Cool. Washington State. Okay. I'm not sure where.
Okay.
Somewhere up there.
I've heard people talk about him here and there, but I don't follow YouTube, right? I never mm-hmm. have time to sit down and watch YouTube videos.
Yeah.
And so I just randomly came across that one episode mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, well, that was kind of cool. And I watched it because I wanted to see the suspension, the three link
yeah.
description, I guess, the how to of it. So, yeah, I thought it was kind of cool. I liked what he did and the way he kind of sets things up and explains things. It was really cool. So I think it'd be cool to get him on the show, get him on the podcast, or
yeah.
do a snail shop talk with him or something.
Yeah. So. He has 130,000 subscribers now.
Jesus Christ. Nice. Good for him.
Yeah. Awesome for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does. He makes great videos and he knows his stuff. So. Definitely. Good kudos.
Mm-hmm. I think that's about all I had.
Okay.
I haven't been, like I said, I haven't been up to Wheeling. Kermit's still down, but mm-hmm. I think 2 weeks out, two and a half weeks out, and I'll have Kermit back.
That'll be awesome.
I'm excited.
Well, let's go take him up to Ori.
Cool. Sounds good. Do you have any final words for everybody?
Episode 130. Get excited.
And that's 130.
Ciento?
130.
That might be right. I don't know.
Well, that my friends, practice. Either way, keep crawling.
What sits at the bottom of the sea and twitches?
Ursula?
A nervous wreck.
Oh. That is pretty good.
I think you'll like this one, though.
Okay.
I got one for you.
Yeah?
How do you drown a hipster?
How do you drown or drowned?
Drowned.
How do you drown? I feel like there's a play on a past
tense. Or drown.
Oh, okay. Like
it doesn't necessarily. How do you drown a hipster? Either way.
How do you drown a hipster? Put a hair tie at the bottom of a pool?
No. What? You throw them in the mainstream.
Lame.
Oh, you don't like that one?
I like the nervous wreck one better. No.
How about this one then? If I can turn my damn phone back on. I got one for you.
Okay.
Where are average things manufactured?
Average things manufactured, I don't know.
In the Satisfactory.
In the Satisfactory. Okay. That one's a decent one. Did you know that protons have mass?
No.
Yeah, it's crazy. I didn't know either. I didn't even realize they were Catholic.
It's pretty good.
Hold on. Where is it? There we go.